A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hannah sent us this one, and I've got to say, it's the kind of prompt that makes you stop and stare at a map for 20 minutes. She wants to talk about Socotra, the island that looks like a botany textbook had a fever dream. Dragon blood trees, plants shaped like bottles, beaches that could pass for the Seychelles. But here's the thing, it's in Yemen, and she's asking three questions that get progressively harder. What would a trip actually be like? Is it safe? And can Israeli citizens visit at all?
That last one is the knife edge of this whole conversation.
It really is. Because the fantasy of Socotra, this lost world of endemic species, limestone caves, water that shade of blue you don't quite believe, it collides hard with the reality that you're talking about a war zone, sovereign territory. And June is actually peak season right now. The dry season just started. If you were going to go, this is when you'd be booking.
The travel advisories are a mess. The UK Foreign Office says don't go anywhere in Yemen. The US State Department says the same. But then you dig into who actually controls Socotra, and it's not the Houthis. Since 2018, it's been the UAE-backed Southern Transitional Council running things on the ground. The UAE has a military presence there. They've built infrastructure. They've been investing. So you've got this bizarre situation where the island itself has been relatively stable. No terrorist incidents, no kidnappings of tourists, but it's still under the umbrella of a country in an active civil war.
Which creates this gap between what the travel advisories say and what's actually happening on the island. And that gap is where the real question lives. It's not just can you get there. It's can you get there given who you are and what passport you're holding.
Hannah's question is especially pointed because she's asking from Jerusalem, so we're not doing a generic travel guide here, we're looking at this through a very specific lens.
And I think the honest answer structure here is, for some people, Socotra is an expedition that requires serious planning and risk tolerance, but is genuinely doable. For others, and Hannah falls into this category, the answer in mid-2026 is essentially no, and we need to explain exactly why, without sugarcoating it.
Let's do that. Let's start with what Socotra actually is, because the place itself is extraordinary, and then work our way through the logistics, the safety calculus, and the specific legal barriers. Socotra is an archipelago about 380 kilometers south of the Arabian Peninsula in the Indian Ocean. Four main islands, but the big one. Socotra itself is where almost everything you've seen in photos lives. UNESCO made it a World Heritage Site in 2008, and the biodiversity numbers are staggering. 37% of its plant species exist nowhere else on Earth.
37%? That's not a quirk. That's basically a parallel evolutionary track.
It really is. The island split off from mainland Africa something like 20 million years ago, so the flora and fauna just went their own way. The dragon blood tree is the poster child. Dracaena cinnabari. Looks like an inside-out umbrella, bleeds red sap that's been used as medicine, and die for centuries. But there's also the bottle tree, the cucumber tree, the Socotra desert rose. The place has been called the Galapagos of the Indian Ocean, and for once, the comparison isn't lazy travel writing.
Though Galapagos of the Indian Ocean is exactly the kind of phrase that gets people booking flights without checking who controls the airport.
That's the thing. Socotra has been part of Yemen since unification in 1990, and Yemen has been in a brutal civil war since 2014. Hundreds of thousands dead, one of the worst humanitarian crises on the planet. The Houthis control the capital, Sana'a, and much of the north. The internationally recognized government is based in Aden. And then there's the Southern Transitional Council, which is backed by the UAE and has de facto control of Socotra.
When Hannah asks, is it safe to visit? The answer isn't a simple yes or no about the island itself. It's about the layers. The island has been quiet. No attacks, no tourist incidents under STC control. But the airspace you fly through, the visa you apply for, the government that claims sovereignty, those are all entangled in an active conflict zone.
We haven't even gotten to the Israeli passport question yet, which adds an entirely separate legal dimension. Yemen is technically in a state of war with Israel. Israeli citizens are explicitly barred from entry under Yemeni law.
Which is why we're going to take this in order. What the trip actually demands of you, what the safety picture really looks like on the ground, versus on the advisories, and then the specific, and honestly, pretty stark, answer for someone holding an Israeli passport.
The first thing to know about actually getting to Socotra, and this is where the fantasy runs straight into a wall, is that there are no commercial flights from outside Yemen. You can't fly direct from Dubai or Cairo or anywhere else. The only commercial carrier that serves the island is Yemenia Airways, and you have to connect through a mainland Yemeni city first.
That's the national carrier of a country in a civil war.
And their safety record, I'll just say, has been the subject of some scrutiny, but they're the only option if you're not chartering. The standard route is fly to Cairo or Abu Dhabi, then Yemenia to Seyoun or Aden, then a connecting flight to Socotra's airport in Hadibo. Each leg is subject to cancellation, delay, or rescheduling with basically no notice. The British travel blogger I mentioned, his flight was delayed 3 days in Cairo waiting for a Yemenia connection that kept getting pushed back.
3 days in an airport in Cairo, waiting for a flight to a civil war country, to then catch another flight to an island with no ATMs. That's not a vacation, that's a test of character.
It's the kind of thing that doesn't show up in the Instagram photos of dragon blood trees. The alternative is a charter flight from Abu Dhabi, arranged through UAE-connected tour operators. These are irregular, they run maybe a few times a month during peak season, and they cost anywhere from $800 to $1,500 round trip. But they bypass the mainland Yemen transit, which is a meaningful safety advantage.
You're paying a premium to avoid Aden Airport, which, given the situation, is probably money well spent.
Once you land, the infrastructure is what you'd expect from an island that's been largely cut off from global supply chains. There are no luxury hotels. Accommodation is basic eco-lodges. Some are quite charming, built from local stone and palm fronds, or you're camping. The roads are mostly unpaved. There are no ATMs on the entire island. Electricity is intermittent, running on generators, and internet is satellite-based and unreliable.
So you're carrying every dollar you'll need in cash, in a place where if something goes wrong, there's no embassy to call, and no easy way to leave.
And you need a local guide and a 4x4 vehicle. You can't just rent a car and explore. The guide system is partly practical, partly regulatory. The Socotra Archipelago Conservation and Development Program requires it as part of the permit process, which brings us to the paperwork.
This is where it gets properly bureaucratic.
Every foreign visitor needs two things, a Yemeni visa and a Socotra-specific permit. The visa is complicated because you have to apply through whichever Yemeni authority you can actually reach, either the Houthi-controlled government in Sana'a or the internationally recognized government in Aden. Tour operators typically handle this, but the processing time is 4 to 8 weeks and there's no guarantee. The island permit is separate, issued by the Conservation Authority, and it's designed to limit visitor numbers and fund environmental protection.
You're not just booking a flight. You're navigating a visa system run by a fragmented government, plus a conservation permit, plus a guide requirement, all while carrying a brick of cash into a place with no backup infrastructure. And that's before we even discuss who you are and what passport you hold.
The numbers tell the story. Pre-war, Socotra saw about 4,000 tourists a year, mostly Europeans, some from the Gulf. In the last few years, that's dropped to a few hundred annually, mostly UAE, connected travelers, and the kind of hardcore adventurers who consider a 3-day airport delay part of the experience. June is the start of the dry season, which is the best window. The monsoon winds hit from June to September, but they're manageable on the north coast, and the landscape is green from the spring rains.
If you're a determined traveler with the right passport, enough cash, and a high tolerance for uncertainty, it's doable. Not easy, not comfortable, but doable. The question is whether you should.
The should you question is where we have to separate two completely different conversations. For most travelers, the safety calculus on Socotra itself is better than the headlines suggest. For Israeli citizens, the answer is in a different category entirely.
Let's take the general case first. Because there's a genuine disconnect between what the travel advisories say and what's actually happening on the island.
The UK Foreign Office and the US State Department both say do not travel to Yemen. No carve-out for Socotra, no exception for the SDC-controlled South. And from an institutional perspective, that makes sense. They're not going to issue a travel advisory that says Yemen is extremely dangerous except for this one island where it's probably fine. The liability alone.
You're not getting it. No standard insurer will cover a trip to a country under a level 4 advisory. If something goes wrong, medical evacuation, injury, political evacuation, you're paying out of pocket.
Here's what's actually happened on the ground. Since 2018, when the UAE-backed STC took control of Socotra, there have been zero terrorist attacks on the island, zero kidnappings of tourists. The UAE has invested in the airport, built a military base, and maintained enough stability that small numbers of tourists have been visiting without incident. The risk isn't Socotra itself, it's the transit and the unpredictability.
The transit being the weak point. If you're flying Yemen Air through Aden or Seyun, you're touching mainland Yemen, which is where the actual conflict is. The UAE charter flights from Abu Dhabi bypass that entirely, which is why they're the safer bet. But they're also irregular and expensive, and you're still entering Yemeni sovereign territory.
The other risk that's harder to quantify is what happens if the situation changes while you're there. The STC's control is stable for now, but Yemen's civil war has shifted alliances multiple times. If something broke down between the STC and the UAE, or if the Houthis made a move toward the island, you'd be stuck on a remote archipelago with no consular support and no easy exit. That's not a high probability scenario, but it's not zero.
For a non-Israeli traveler, someone with a European or American or Gulf passport, the honest answer is, Socotra is an expedition with real risks, mostly concentrated in the logistics and the lack of backup, but the island itself is not an active conflict zone. You're gambling on stability, not dodging bullets.
Now we get to Hannah's actual question.
The Israeli passport changes everything.
Yemen is in a state of war with Israel, under Yemeni law, and this applies regardless of whether we're talking about the Houthi government in Sana'a or the internationally recognized government in Aden. Israeli passport holders are explicitly barred from entering the country. There is no Israeli diplomatic presence anywhere in Yemen. No embassy, no consulate, no third country that handles Israeli interests. If an Israeli citizen were detained, there is literally no one to call.
This isn't a theoretical legal artifact. The Houthis are actively hostile. Their slogan literally includes death to Israel. But even the STC, which is backed by the UAE and is more pragmatic, has not signaled any openness to Israeli visitors. The UAE normalized relations with Israel through the Abraham Accords, but that doesn't extend to the territory the UAE controls in Yemen. The STC has its own political calculations.
The question becomes, can an Israeli citizen find a workaround? And this is where people get into dangerous territory.
The second passport idea, it's the first thing everyone thinks of.
It doesn't work. The Yemeni visa application process, whether through Sana'a or Aden, typically asks you to list all nationalities you hold. If you hold Israeli citizenship and you don't disclose it, that's visa fraud. It's not a minor paperwork error. If you discovered, and the UAE, which facilitates a lot of these trips, does share certain security data, you could be detained, deported, or worse. And remember, you're in a country with no Israeli consular support.
The UAE doesn't stamp Israeli passports, which is why some people think they can use an Emirati transit as a shield. But that's about what's in your passport, not what you declare on a visa application. The Yemeni authorities aren't checking for stamps. They're checking your stated nationalities against their own entry prohibitions. If you lie, you've committed fraud against a country that is technically at war with the country you're hiding.
I want to put this in context by comparing it to other destinations that Israelis find difficult. North Korea, Israeli citizens can visit with a visa, though it's heavily restricted and you need to go through a tour operator. Saudi Arabia. Since the Abraham Accords, Israelis can visit for business and religious tourism. Iran. technically barred, but many dual nationals visit on their second passport, and there's a somewhat established practice of looking the other way as long as you don't have Israeli stamps.
Socotra is harder than all of them. Harder than North Korea, because at least North Korea has a process. Harder than Iran, because Iran's enforcement is inconsistent, and there's a known playbook. Socotra combines a war zone legal framework, fragmented government authority, no diplomatic backchannel, and a visa system that explicitly asks the question you can't honestly answer.
The one theoretical path that could change this is if the Abraham Accords ever expand to include Yemen. But in mid-2026, there's no indication that's happening. The Houthis are actively escalating against Israel. There have been missile and drone attacks linked to the broader regional tensions. The STC, despite UAE backing, has not shown any interest in normalization. And even if the STC wanted to, they don't control Yemen's foreign policy. They're a sub-state actor with de facto control of one region.
For Hannah, and for any Israeli citizen asking this question, the answer in 2026 is straightforward, and it's not the one anyone wants to hear. A trip to Socotra is effectively impossible without taking on extreme legal risk and potential personal danger. It's not about the island being unsafe. It's about the fact that your passport makes you legally barred from entry into a country where the consequences of being caught are not theoretical.
Where does that leave us? Let's break it into practical advice for two different audiences.
For the non-Israeli traveler, someone with a European, American, or Gulf passport, Socotra is not a casual trip. It's an expedition. Budget $3,000 to $5,000 for a 10-day trip, all in. That covers the charter flight from Abu Dhabi if you can get one, the Yemeni visa, the island permit, a guide, a 4x4 basic accommodation or camping gear, and a thick stack of cash because there are no ATMs.
That budget assumes nothing goes wrong. If your flight gets delayed in Cairo for 3 days, you're eating into your contingency. If you need medical evacuation, you're paying out of pocket because no standard travel insurance covers a level 4 advisory country. The guide I mentioned who did it in 2024, he said the single most important thing he brought was extra cash, because when the one generator in his camp failed and they needed fuel from Hadibo, the guy selling it didn't take cards.
The generator fuel economy of Socotra. There's a travel guidebook chapter. Nobody's written.
The point is, you go into this with your eyes open. It's doable, the island itself is stable, the experience is singular, but you are one logistical failure away from a very expensive headache with no safety net.
For Israeli travelers, the answer is different and it's not ambiguous. The honest guidance is, not right now. The legal barrier isn't a gray area. It's an explicit prohibition backed by a country in a state of war with Israel. Lying on a visa application isn't a clever workaround. It's a serious offense in a place where you have no consular protection.
The thing to watch is whether the political map shifts. If Yemen ever joins the Abraham Accords, unlikely in the near term, but not impossible if the STC gains more autonomy over its external relations, the calculus changes entirely. The UAE has already normalized with Israel. If the STC ever establishes independent visa control separate from Sana'a or Aden, that could open a path.
For now, though, the closest alternatives are worth naming. Abd al-Kuri is part of the same archipelago and shares some of the biodiversity, but it's even harder to reach and the same legal barriers apply. A more realistic option is Oman's Dhofar region. The monsoon season creates a green landscape with frankincense trees, endemic birds, and limestone formations that echo Socotra without the geopolitical tangle. It's not the dragon blood tree, but it's accessible to Israeli passport holders.
Which brings us to the broader thing this whole conversation points at. The most exotic places on Earth are often the most politically complicated. Socotra is a reminder that travel isn't just about geography, it's about geopolitics. The question, can I go there, is never just about distance or cost or infrastructure. It's always about who you are and where your passport was issued.
That's not a small thing to sit with. The dragon blood tree has been on that island for millions of years. It doesn't care about borders or visa regimes. But the rest of us have to navigate a world where the most beautiful places are sometimes the least reachable. Not because they're far away, but because of the lines we've drawn across the map.
The question that lingers for me is what happens if Yemen ever stabilizes? The UAE has already invested in the airport, the port, basic infrastructure. They're not doing that out of charity. They see Socotra as a strategic asset and potentially a tourism goldmine. If the STC consolidates control and the war ends, you could see Socotra become the next big thing within a decade. Direct flights from Dubai, eco-resorts, the whole package.
Which would be a double-edged sword. The reason Socotra looks the way it does is precisely because it's been isolated. 37% endemic species doesn't survive a Marriott and a cruise ship terminal. The conservation permit system exists for a reason, but it's hard to imagine it holding up against real commercial pressure.
That's the tension, isn't it? The same geopolitical instability that makes it inaccessible right now is also what's preserved it. If the barriers come down, the place changes. Maybe for the better for the people who live there, they deserve economic opportunity like anyone else. But the Socotra of the dragonblood tree forests and empty white sand beaches might not be the Socotra of 2035.
Which is why, for the traveler who can go, and I mean legally, safely, with the right passport, there's an argument for doing it sooner rather than later. Not recklessly, but deliberately. Before the charter flights become scheduled, and the eco-lodges become hotels.
For the traveler who can't, and that includes Hannah, and honestly most Israeli passport holders, the dragonblood tree isn't going anywhere. It's been there for millions of years. It survived the splitting of continents. It can wait a few more years for the right traveler to arrive, under the right conditions, with the right paperwork and a clear conscience.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1940s, a French microbiologist studying cheese exported from the Comoros Islands found that a single gram of surface rind from a locally aged goat cheese contained over 400 million live bacteria, a population density roughly equal to the entire human population of Earth at the time, compressed into a thimble of dairy.
Right. Right.
That's a lot of bacteria. This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you've got a weird prompt about a place you can't go, or a place you're not sure you're allowed to go, send it to us at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We're at myweirdprompts.com. Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.